You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe. Hey, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to Go Ahead Caller. I'm Jason Falls. We have a wonderful show for you today. Today on the show, we're going to dive pretty deep into a huge marketing channel that I'm betting most of you aren't thinking much about for your business, whether that it be large or small or whatever. And that is Amazon. Have you ever, do you sell things? Do you have things to sell? Why on earth would you not have them listed in the largest retail marketplace on the interwebs? So we're going to dive into that and learn a lot more about Amazon than you probably know from a business perspective. Because if you think about it, Amazon is its own ecosystem, right? And so it is, and I've got to get this camera switching thing on the at the intro better, because me and half black screen is terrible. I'm working on it. I'm getting there. I'm doing this all by myself, so give me a break. Anyway, so Amazon is its own ecosystem. And so what you know about things like search engine optimization apply there, but the algorithm at Amazon is very different than the algorithm with Google. So we're going to learn all sorts of cool things from Shannon Roddy. He is here. He is one of the foremost experts on launching and managing businesses on Amazon. He's consulted with and taught hundreds of people how to do this for their businesses, large and small. So we're going to mine him for some data and information and how the hell do I do this. Then we're going to talk about on-demand programming. Do you watch the Netflix? Do you stream the Hulus? Do you listen to the podcasts? Well, gone are the days of waiting for the next episode because publishers now are like dumping crap on your yard. They're just coming by and saying, look, here's 12 episodes. Knock yourself out. And I want to know, is that a good thing or not? We'll talk a little bit about that later on. And in today's rant, I have a bone to pick with construction workers and contractors specifically who work on bathrooms. And so you need to alert the family and gather around the talking picture box, kids, because today's rant's going to be fun. First, a little bit of housekeeping, though, before we go any further and bring on our guest today. For those of you who do enjoy the podcasts and would probably prefer to hear this on demand at your leisure via your audio devices rather than looking at my ugly mug and my guest's handsome and or beautiful mug, depending on who the guest is, then I'm working on getting this thing on the podcasts. If you know anything about Libsyn, today's episode will be there, but I haven't connected all the routes and plumbing to make sure that it goes to the iTunes and stuff yet. So that'll be coming soon. We're going to be at podcast, full on podcast. So when I publish the recording of the video on jasonfalls.com, there will also be a new episode that appears on the audio version. So that's coming soon. For those of you who have been asking for it, I've been wanting it, but I've been wanting someone else to volunteer to do it for me for free, and that ain't going to happen. So I'm just going to figure out how to do it, and I've been working on it. So, all right. All that being said, you're not here to listen to me babble on about the show or anything. You're here to learn about Amazon today, and so I'd like to welcome to the program Shannon Roddy. Shannon, how are you, man? Very good. It's great to have you here, and I know that you are one of the foremost experts on the Amazons in the world. So tell me how you got to be in this position. How do you know so much about that?
I would say two things. One, accident, and how many people in the world have ever used that? Like, how did you get into your job? It was an accident or a coincidence. But I would say the main underlying drive is curiosity. So ever since I was a kid, I've loved learning things. And you can read a manual if there is one, but I prefer diving in and asking lots and lots of questions. So I was a kid growing up in school where I would ask a question, raise my hand, the teacher would answer. And before the teacher had finished answering, I had my hand up again. And you could just see the look on their face. They're basically sick of me. So I really got started about 6.5 years ago. My good friend, Eric Koymans, who's an e-commerce guru, invited me to work with his company. And they were working with a company, an apparel company, international apparel company. And they had tons of listings on Amazon. They had only had about 25% of their products listed on Amazon. And they'd had dozens and dozens of unauthorized sellers, lots of listing optimization problems, lots of chaos, parent-child variation issues, and so forth. And they hired me to clean the Amazon platform up. I, of course, knew nothing about Amazon. I sold one product on Amazon. I still do.
Isn't that how it always starts?
But it came from being willing to dig deep. And I'm a problem solver. I love figuring out a way to get through the door. And so when I was in high school, I taught myself to pick locks and I made my own lock picking set because I was fascinated and curious. If I don't have a key, what's another way I can get in? I've only used it for legitimate purposes, which has come in handy many times. But that's kind of the expertise and where it comes from is a desire to pick the lock of Amazon, if you will, and figure out how it works behind the scenes. And so that it just comes from a lot of passion, a lot of hard work, and a lot of time spent learning the system, working with a lot of good people, a lot of good companies.
So I'm canceling my AAA membership and calling you next time I'm stuck on the highway. So,
I don't do cars.
come on, man. Anyway, it's really fascinating because when I ask people that question, I do get very similar stories of, well, it was by accident. I didn't even know what I was doing, and somebody hired me to do it. And so, but that's kind of the way of the world these days. So the thing that has always fascinated me about Amazon, and you mentioned unauthorized sellers and whatnot, and of course I've had some experience with a large e-commerce company. I used to work at Cafe Press, and Amazon was a big, you know, sort of conduit for us. So it was a little different context than I think what a lot of people have to deal with. But tell me how big the problem of unauthorized sellers is and how does it affect businesses?
Well, there's two parts to it. First of all, the problem is huge. Most people are so overwhelmed by it. They don't even know that there's a way to fix it. They just sort of try to manage it and keep it from getting out of hand, which it already is. And I'll give you a good example. TableMate was a company I worked with. They've been around for 25 plus years. You know, one of the original TV trays. And they did not have a direct sales channel on Amazon. And so when we went on the platform, they hired me to basically revamp and reclaim their territory, their brand territory on Amazon. We kicked off 150 sellers and shut down over 50 duplicate listings with copyright infringement, trademark infringement. And we optimized our listings. We had number one new releases in every category. We did $1 million the first year and claim number one bestseller on TV trays. Those are the results if you know how to manage and navigate it. If you don't, it basically means you're struggling. But there's two sides to the unauthorized. One is just unauthorized resellers, online arbitrage, retail arbitrage, or dropshippers who just jump on the listing and are selling your product. There's a lot of issues with that because they're typically never touching the product. They're never seeing the product. They're dropshipping from Walmart. And so if there's a problem with the order, they've never seen the product before. They don't have any customer service capacity. Right. That leaves a bad reputation for the brand. And the other side is the unauthorized counterfeit or patent infringement. So people who are literally, you know, using your images, using your trademark, or knocking off your product. So really, both of those are a huge issue. Amazon opened up the marketplace to allow China to sell direct on Amazon.com. A lot of that shipping is subsidized by the U.S. Postal Service. Don't ask me how, but you know, the issue is enormous, and most brands are so uneducated, they don't even know where to start. They don't even know that there's solutions that you can solve this problem and reclaim your brand. We're working with tons of companies right now in that process.
I was going to say, just that alone would probably be a pretty lucrative business, I would think, because you're just putting more money back in your clients' pockets at that point. That's it's amazing. I knew it was a big problem. Because in the world of you know, kind of people from different countries or even from America doing rogue stuff, but also affiliate marketers and whatnot who skirt the rules just to put 20 extra bucks in their pocket for a transaction, there's just a lot of mess out there. So let's back up a little bit. That topic just fascinated me. I want to get into it right away because I know that a lot of people need to know that. But let's back up a little bit and talk about launching your business on Amazon. Who needs to be on Amazon? What businesses should be there? And if there are businesses that shouldn't be there, who are they?
Good question. So number one, the first answer is almost everybody. And this is why. People are like, I don't like Amazon, or I don't really want to sell Amazon. I heard there's a lot of issues. Not realizing you can manage all the issues. You know, our courses and our consulting, we teach you how to manage all these issues to handle it. So without that toolbox, yeah, it's almost impossible, and it might be better. Here's the problem. Amazon is a search engine that garners over 55% of all initial product searches on the internet. So not being on Amazon is like saying, I don't want to be on Google, right? Nobody says, I don't want to be on Google. You have to be on Google. It doesn't matter if you like Google or not. You know, we got a pet store around the corner, and I went in and I said, I'm every time I come here, I have trouble finding you guys because you're not on Yelp. She's like, well, I don't really like Yelp. I'm like, do you like your customers? Do you like money? Do you like staying in business? You don't really have a choice. The choice is to be on Amazon and manage it. And the challenge is if you're not representing your product or brand well on Amazon, someone else is going to do it poorly for you. So we say Amazon is a branding platform before it is an e-commerce platform. And once you understand that, then it takes the mentality and the strategy up much differently. Well, we don't like Amazon. They charge too many fees. That's not the point.
Right.
You have to be there. I'd say there's certain products that probably shouldn't. A lot of them, or the ones that are most challenging, are ones that are incredibly heavy. You know, ones where basically the shipping, if you have to ship it into FBA and then FBA has to ship it and the pick and pack fees, where you get down to like zero margin or negative margin, you know, those are ones that really shouldn't. But to have some brand presence, to control your brand presence on Amazon, mm-hmm. should be your number two priority after dominating with your website sales, because it's a search engine.
Right. I know when I was at Cafe Press, obviously Cafe Press is a large internet retailer, and we had a partnership with Amazon where we would actually supply them with a product feed. And so products would go through a database and it would automatically appear on Amazon. No web development had to be done. It was all an automated thing, which, you know, comes with its challenges and problems too, especially when you're looking at Cafe Press as an online retailer that sources its art from users. So you would have people who would upload the dumbest stuff in the world, sometimes offensive, and if you don't have human eyeballs on it, then it suddenly Amazon's got something in its marketplace that people are like, that's offending me. And in this day and age, everything offends somebody.
True.
So, but for most businesses though, you know, that sort of automated pipeline is probably not possible unless you're a huge enterprise with a lot of retail sales. So I think one of the myths that some people who have things to sell might be hidden behind right now is how difficult it is to start a business on Amazon, list things, and manage it. So what's your time commitment? How difficult is this for like a small business that wants to sell things? How hard is it for them to do?
So there's two parts to that. One is with our courses and one is without our courses, right?
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
So, and I say that very legitimately and authentically. I've worked with, you know, like you said, hundreds of companies and people, and I've watched people struggle for months to try to get their product on Amazon. I've watched people get so frustrated that they shut their account down before they ever got their product listed because it was so frustrating. So there's two things I want to tee this up with. One is Amazon's goal is to be the most consumer-centric company in the world. And that means by default that they are not the most seller centric. You have to accept that relationship going in. You are not their number one priority. It is Amazon customers, Amazon, and then you somewhere near the bottom. And that's not a bad thing. That's just the way it is. The second thing that you have to remember is Amazon does not have your best interests in mind as a brand. Their goal is to be the best platform and make the most money. They do not care about your brand equity. They prohibit distribution enforcement through their platform. They don't honor MAP. minimum advertised pricing, nor do they seek to in any way allow brand owners to control it. Counterfeiting is different. That becomes a legal issue. But you have to understand that Amazon's not going to help you in the way that other marketplaces might want to. So the piecemeal approach is I watch a YouTube video, I read a blog article, go on YouTube, whatever the case, maybe even, small seminars and stuff, you get bits and pieces. So the challenge is even somebody who's doing a startup, the amount of time it takes to aggregate all this information is incredibly time consuming. Mm-hmm. So the concept is really you can get some products up in about 6 weeks, right? You've got to use a flat file template typically. Like you said, there's some great tools out there, Ecom Dash and other ones that will allow you to manage your inventory on Amazon or listings, but getting the listings up, the best way to do it is a flat file template, unless you're using like a channel advisor, which we don't personally recommend. The other thing is you've got to optimize your listing. It's not about getting it up there. It's about optimizing it and driving traffic. So to put a product on Amazon is like hiding a product on the, 57th shelf of Walmart, aisle 57, somewhere in the back, stuff behind some Beanie Babies. Yeah. No one's ever going to see it just because it's there.
Right.
And so it's really about understanding the strategy and going, okay, I optimize the listing. I have to include SEO. I want optimized titles. I want to use enhanced brand content and videos and all these things, but then I have to drive traffic to it. So it's not that complicated if you have the information, tools, and resources that you need. And you have someone that you can go to for help. And Seller Central, even though they can be really helpful, you have to know how to navigate it. So they might not be helpful if you're just looking for, tips on a flat file upload. But the Amazon flywheel is so critical to understand, and it is optimize, launch, analyze. You optimize your listing, you launch your product by driving internal and external traffic, and then you analyze those results. With that analysis, you can do more optimization on your listing, you drive more traffic and so forth. You spin that Amazon flywheel and you have the ability to ramp up to a number one bestseller. The problem is people go into it thinking, I can put the Amazon product on Amazon and it's just gonna sell and I'm gonna be a millionaire.
Yeah. So you mentioned a few minutes ago that they've opened up to China. Ben Whitaker is watching and listening and says China is a huge problem on Amazon. They killed eBay and they're working on killing Amazon. What's your take on that? And is China good or ultimately bad for the Amazon sellers?
China's a country, so I'm not going to say like China's good or bad. as a country,
they can kill you.
Yeah, we're not here to judge the people. But from an e-commerce perspective, if I have the capacity to sell and build a brand, because the biggest challenge, the hardest thing to do in building a brand is creating brand awareness for a product, doing the product development, the IP costs, to have somebody be able to, who has access to a factory, be able to create that exact same product, make a couple changes and sell the same thing for half the price because they don't have any overhead. They don't have the branding equity, no investment in IP. That becomes a detrimental challenge because you're basically taking advantage of the people who worked hard to bring you that product in the first place. And Amazon's doing the same thing to an extent with, their brands. They're buying up private label companies. They're building their own private label companies. I read an article recently that thankfully most of those fail because it's a little scary when somebody has all of the data. They know exactly what people are searching for. They know exactly what converts. So the goal is not necessarily whether or not China is bad or good, because unauthorized sellers can be your next door neighbor. It's an everything everywhere problem. The question is, do you have the ability to grow, build, and protect your brand on Amazon? And how do you do that effectively? And that's talking about all unauthorized sellers or any counterfeiters or knockoff from anywhere. We had counterfeiters from the UK who were making duplicates of our product, replicas of our product. So it's not just a China problem, it's an everybody problem. And the goal is, how do you solve that problem effectively?
So for the record, Ben says he sells on Amazon now and loves it most days. So, which I'm sure is probably a sentiment that everybody can relate to. Okay. So if a business were to want to dive into this tomorrow, what do they need to prepare now to be Amazon ready? And then what are the pitfalls that they need to look for in ramping up?
So three things. And we'll talk about this on Thursday as well. But We say for any business or brand starting on Amazon, there's three critical factors. Number one is a registered US trademark. Get a registered trademark for your brand name. If you don't have that, when you finish this webinar, go start that process. Because it helps you not only protect your brand and protect your IP on Amazon, Amazon also gives you tons of benefits through brand registry, like enhanced brand content, like brand ads, Amazon storefronts, and the ability to add video, which is all free, but it requires that registered trademark, and it can take 9 months to a year plus to get. So having that is critical. The second one is GS1 UPC codes. A lot of people overlook this, you know, fact. They go, well, maybe it's private label, or you know, we're a smaller company. We only have a couple products. You can buy 10 UPC codes from GS1. Mm-hmm. But getting authentic GS1 UPC codes is so critical. You can buy them from unauthorized resellers of those UPC codes. You don't control the UPC code. You have no authority in that UPC code line. It's not your company prefix on it. So taking the time and making the investment to get legitimate GS1 UPC codes is critical. And then number three is having an e-commerce and social media presence. And that's important because even if you have a private label that you want to launch, build it to the brand level. That's always my recommendation. Build it to the brand level, invest in the IP, build a social media following. If you do, you'll be able to better understand your customers. You can drive that traffic to Amazon to launch new products, to generate sales velocity. There's so many benefits to that. And also if and when Amazon suspends you or shuts your ASINs down, it's not completely killing your whole sales channel. You've got a diversified sales channel, at least on your own website, where people can buy the product. So understanding that those three are the biggest keys to success. And then as far as pitfalls go, there's a handful, but again, the number one thing we see, the reason businesses fail starting to sell on Amazon is because they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
And if I don't know what I don't know, I can't even go look for it. If I know what I don't know, I'm like, oh, I need to research this. I need to research that. But I talk to brands who've been selling on Amazon for 5 years. They're like, I didn't know I need a registered trademark, right? And All that means loss of sales, loss of brand protection, loss of opportunity. But there's so many things that you can do incorrectly that will either keep Amazon from even validating and allowing you to create your Seller Central account in the first place. I'm working with a company right now. He's been trying for a year and a half. And we went on for 15 minutes. And I said, oh, you need a business license. He's like, that's it? He didn't understand what they were asking for, you know?
Nice.
So they suspended his account before he'd even opened it. That's proactive. Let's be honest. The suspending his account before they've even started, it's a little challenging. But there's so many things that can get you suspended that you need to be aware of. Suspension prevention is so much more cost effective than suspension reinstatement. So understanding all the things that you could do, they're like, well, yeah, I reached out to this customer and I asked them to remove their negative product review because it, you know, wasn't for my product, or, you know, I sent them a replacement. Amazon will suspend you like that for that. And there's all these things that people just don't know that they can just literally in one day wipe out their account. And you have to be aware of those things.
I got a catchphrase for you. What you just said is like, ooh, that's almost good. But if you replace one word, it's even better. So suspension prevention is better than suspension intervention.
Yeah.
Make them rhyme, and now you got a catchphrase. How about that?
Yeah, we cover that. You know, prevention versus intervention is true. And that's why we look at, whether it's the course that we sell or the coaching, we can save somebody so much time and make you so much more money if you make the investment up front as opposed to making it 6 months down the line or a year down the line. It's like you can pay to learn how to optimize and launch your products, or you can pay with mediocre sales for the lifetime of your brand on Amazon. Right. And it's absolutely true, but we love helping people. My passion is helping business owners. I love helping people start and grow their businesses. It's what I live for. Amazon happens to be the channel I do it on now, but in any capacity that I've worked and lived and breathed, I love empowering people to take care of their families and make an impact in their communities.
Yeah, that's a noble cause, and certainly one that I think a lot of us can get behind. So you mentioned a second ago that there's so many, you know, things you can do to, you know, be suspended. There's lots of mistakes that can be made. So of the business owners out there that are operating on Amazon now, that have maybe they've been established for a while, but they probably didn't take your course or didn't use consulting from you to figure this out. What are the biggest mistakes that people are making that have been there a while that you'd like to see businesses or the people in the audience today not make?
Yeah, I mean, number one certainly is like the unauthorized sellers. You know, we have brands all the time, even when they're aware of them, they go, well, we've got a bunch of sellers that we authorize to sell on Amazon. And as long as they abide by MAP, it's kind of okay with us. It becomes this hodgepodge cesspool to try to manage that. And we really believe in the single seller model, Amazon and the single seller model. I did a webinar with James Thompson, co-founder of Buy Box Experts a year or so ago. It's absolutely critical to represent your brand well and ensure that not only all the products that are being sent in are of the highest quality, not only is your pricing maintained at an equitable level, but also that every customer experience and all the customer service is backed by your company, by your values, and not some third-party seller that may or not, you know, may not give a crap. So kind of looking at it from that standpoint, it's one, the failure to correctly identify the issue of unauthorized sellers and deal with that effectively. Number two is the ability to keep up to date with Amazon and take advantage of all these opportunities. Amazon is changing all the time, all the time. So for me, it's a full-time job. You know, I was talking to somebody a couple of years ago. They said, we built this course on Amazon, collegiate level course. It took us a 9 months, whatever, to develop. And by the time it was done, it was obsolete. And we need help bringing it up to date. It's like, good luck. I've got my own problems. But the whole point is, you know, we talk to people now and they're like, well, I think I'm doing a pretty good job. You know, sales are okay. I'm like, you have no lifestyle photos. You're not using video. You don't have any enhanced brand content. You don't have a storefront. You know, there's all these extra things that you could be doing that are free. But again, it goes back to people don't know what they don't know. So I think for established brands, it's really taking advantage of all the opportunities available on Amazon. We run into people all the time. I say, are you sending automated feedback emails? And they're like, no, I thought it was against Amazon terms of service. I'm like, no, it's fine. It's legitimate as long as you do it within their terms of service. So that fear of Amazon's going to shut me down sometimes becomes so paralyzing that people are afraid to do anything because they're not sure what the rules are. You know, you go on Seller Central Help, there's 14,900 help articles that you have to sift through. I do that. You should just pay to get the excerpt version because you don't want to do that. It's a pain. So keeping up to date with Amazon policy and understanding here's the best practices. Here's what can help boost your sales. Here's what's going to kill your sales. You know, strategy is the most important thing. If you don't have a strategy, you don't have anything. And a strategy is simply, Jason, I'm here. I want to get to there. That's my goal. And strategy is, this is the route I'm going to take. Most people have no strategy and they have tools and resources to help them get somewhere, but they don't even know where that is. And they have no idea how they're going to navigate, you know, the treacherous paths to get there. So I equate Amazon a lot to chess, where you and I are sitting across a board, we're playing chess. It is the same pieces. We know the rules. The board is the same. Different colors on your side, different colors on mine. It really comes down to strategy. Whoever has a better strategy is going to win. That's it. That's all. There's no luck involved. It's right. Not about, you know, oh, I saw this move and you didn't. It's about strategy. So strategy is king, and we help people, you know, get the strategy they need for their business because it might be different for each company that you know, comes along to sell on Amazon.
Right. So Ben, actually, obviously, because he's an Amazon seller, he's active in the comments this morning. And fortunately, I'm refreshing at a rate that I can keep up with him a little bit. So Ben asked, what have you found to be the best way to drive traffic to products outside of Amazon advertising?
So it's a good question. There's a few that I'll mention because there's a lot of ways to do it. And this is actually very brand and very product specific. So it's actually going to vary. So it's not a one size fits all, but let's talk about a few of the top ones. Number one is affiliate marketing. A lot of people aren't even aware of this. I worked with Tony Castandrinos, who's now like an affiliate consulting guru. He built Castandrinos Olive Oil, his brand, with his sister Effie, and they used affiliate marketing to launch their product on Amazon. And it was the most successful launch I've ever seen. And they hardly spent a dime doing it. All they did is they reached out to all these affiliates, They gave them assets and they gave them samples of the product, and they allowed the affiliates to share it with their traffic, with their audiences. So instead of going after one person, you're going after an influencer who has hundreds or thousands of people, and you drive that traffic to Amazon. And the benefit of affiliate marketing is Amazon pays the affiliate commission, and they pay it for everything in your cart added within like a 24-hour period. So nobody buys one thing on Amazon. I rarely do. You know, it's like you got your dish soap and your vitamins, and then like, oh, I also need this iPhone holder. Okay, so all of those things, they earn a commission on all of that. And if they have thousands of followers, with a single post, they can make a lot of money, and it's just residual income for them. So affiliate marketing is a huge strategy. Beyond that, we've seen people do everything from their own email list and saying, hey, I know that 50% of my customers want to buy the product on Amazon. I'm going to make it easy for them.
Right.
And people that go, well, I would never give my customers away. You're not giving your customers away. They're shopping on Amazon anyways. They want to buy your product on Amazon. And if you leverage that traffic, if you leverage that external traffic, what it's going to do is it's going to create a spike in sales velocity. And that's what catches Amazon's algorithm. And that's what's helped you rank organically if those keywords are strategically placed throughout your listing. So there's tons of opportunities. In some cases, it's video. In some cases, it's Facebook advertising, partnership marketing. My friend Bridget Young runs Modern Musico, and they do partnership marketing. So if you've got an innovative product that nobody's ever heard of, there is no SEO, nobody's searching for it. And even if they are, how do you get in front of those audiences? Well, this is a product for moms. Well, we know moms of young kids are going to want this. Well, there's no SEO for it. Let's go after mommy bloggers and target thousands of them and their millions of followers and drive that traffic to Amazon. And usually it's providing assets, a good story, and a product sample. It's the most cost-effective way. So those are just a few, but there's a lot of ways, and it's totally brand and product specific.
Yep, that's great, great advice. And speaking of great advice, now as Shannon has alluded to, his business is teaching people how to do this. So he has online courses that you can purchase and consulting and coaching that you can consult with him with. But on Thursday, just for all of you folks who have dialed in here, Shannon and I are putting together a free web class called How to Launch Your Business on Amazon. So Shannon, tell us a little bit about that. What are people going to learn? Who should come? And what all are we going to fill our brains with on Thursday?
Yeah, so it's going to cover some of the things that we've mentioned here today, but in more depth. And it's really, you know, a majority of the target is for people who aren't yet on Amazon. They're just getting launched. But even if you've already started, as I mentioned, I've worked with companies who have been selling on Amazon for 10 years. They're still missing tons of things they didn't know they didn't know. So if you're looking to launch your business or your brand on Amazon or grow it exponentially, you want that increase in sales, it's going to be a great opportunity to do a deeper dive into things like registered trademarks, into GS1 UPC codes, social media, you know, driving external traffic, delving into these principles. The principles of selling on Amazon are almost more important than the specific tactics, because principles apply to everybody. And I just say a principle is a truth that you can leverage. If it's a truth that you can leverage, that's going to help you whether you're a brand new seller with one product as a sole prop or a multi-million dollar company with thousands of products. It doesn't matter. The principle is going to be the same. So we're going to cover tons of those principles, as well as I think the coolest part is we're actually going to give you a sneak peek behind the scenes of what is inside our courses, as well as a special discount. So to really be able to see what you're going to get, what's inside of those, and all the things that you can learn, all the amazing things it's going to teach you to help you grow your business. And you're talking about one click, the ability to solve 95% of your Amazon problems. That's something that gets people excited. That's what gets me excited. That's why I work so hard to keep it updated and keep this course in front of people.
That's good stuff. And I, for those of you who are watching live, I've dropped a link in the comments, the link to register for Thursday. It's at 4 o'clock Eastern time, 1 o'clock Pacific. Shannon and I will both be there. The link to the registration for the course is msclinks.com/webinar. So fairly easy to remember, but I've dropped it over in the comments, and I'll make sure that I put that link on the recordings that I post today of today's show, so that people can easily click on that and come see us on Thursday afternoon at 4. And you're going to learn all sorts of stuff for free and get discounts to the, you know, the deep dive paid stuff. And so can't really ask for much more than that. So Shannon, thank you so much for the generosity for the audience here. And thanks for doing this for us. Other than Thursday's webinar, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, Jason, thanks so much for having me again. The website is marketplacesellercourses.com. Marketplacesellercourses.com. It's a mouthful, but it's the domain that was available and it best encapsulates what we do. You can find me on LinkedIn at Shannon Roddy. Just search for Shannon Roddy. You can connect or follow me there. And we're also on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter at Marketplace Seller Courses.
Very good. And I'm currently clumsily dropping links to at least Marketplace Seller Courses and your LinkedIn profile in the comments right now, trying to be a full service multitasker. I don't know why I'm doing everything all at once. I need to hire an assistant to do this, but you know, that's the way it works. Shannon, thanks so much for coming by, man. It's been great talking to you.
Great. Thank you so much, Jason.
All right. That's Shannon Roddy. He is with MarketplaceSellerCourses.com. Again, the link is in the comments there on the LinkedIn video. If you would like to join us at 4 o'clock on Thursday for that how to launch your business on Amazon free course, Shannon's going to go deeper than he went today on that. So be very helpful information. The link to that is in the comment thread, but it's msclinks.com/webinar. And that's MSC as in Marketplace Seller Courses. So come by and check it out. I'll be there. I have no Amazon expertise to contribute. So I'm just going to be there to say hi to everybody, I guess. But I'm going to take some notes and learn. Not that I personally have anything that I want to sell on Amazon. But you know, certainly I can run into some clients along the way who will. So it'll be helpful for me to know all that information too. And if you're at an agency or you consult with folks and you're not currently dealing with folks who sell on Amazon, this could be a great strategy and idea that you take to them to say, hey, let's open up this marketplace and drive incremental revenue to your business, which every client probably would be excited about, right? So thanks to Shannon for coming by. Check him out at the links, and we'll see you on Thursday for that. Now, some other business. First of all, before we go along, I want to say hello. Of course, Ben Whitaker, I've mentioned a couple times. He's watching this morning and asking some great questions about selling on Amazon. He currently does, and so I'm glad that he likes that on most days. Barbara Hannon's back again. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us in the community, and I will do a refresh and see if there's anybody else that's swinging by as well, and say hello to you if you are in the chat thread here in just a moment. But our next topic for the morning is binge watching. So my media habits have sort of morphed here in the last couple of years, as a lot of people's have, with the new options and too many options, and I need to control this this media landscape a lot better. The Netflix and the Hulus and the Rokus and the whatever else those things are called, they have helped us develop a new habit, a new way of watching shows. And podcasts are somewhat guilty of it as well. Some of them are, like Serial and the podcasts that are kind of treated like documentaries or television shows where, you know, they want to hook you and bring you through the whole season. Too many of them these days are dropping entire seasons at once, which allows us to binge watch a new season in, you know, a couple of days, which a lot of people get excited about. You know, the new season of House of Cards is dropping, so I'm going to start on Friday, and I'm going to be done by middle of the day Saturday because I'm not going to sleep, and I'm going to have it all, and I'm going to be ahead of everybody. And, you know, for some people, that might be entertaining and fun, and that's cool. Used to be, back in the day, back in my day, and I'm not real old, but I'm older than a lot of the people who have been raised with the Netflixes of the world. It used to be that a television season was like 22 or 23 episodes, and it rolled out once a week over 6 months. And then for the next 6 months, they had this crazy little thing called a rerun, and they would run it again, hence rerun. And so for the same 22, 23 week cadence over 6 more months, you would be able to go back and watch the stuff that you missed and watch it again if you were an enthusiast about the show. And then at the time that that rerun segment got done, guess what? New season starts next week. So that's kind of how it worked in TV forever. And there were, you know, certainly pluses and minuses to that approach, I'm sure. You had to wait a week to see the next show. But I really feel like that is a good thing, because now when I sit down and I say, oh, look, there's a new season of the House of the Cards on the Netflixes, and I'm going to sit down this weekend and I'm going to watch all of the episodes. Oh, look, they made it easy on me. Instead of 23 episodes, it's 12. So I don't even have to take a full day to watch all of these episodes. Here's the problem. When I get done with episode 12, guess how long I have to wait for the next season? 364 days or so. Because season, in TV terms, in entertainment terms, is a year. Season in rational people thinking's terms is like 3 months. But the cost of production and whatnot, they can't do, you know, brand new, awesome, you know, killer Hollywood produced episodes of anything for more than, you know, 6 months, I guess, without falling apart. I don't know what the deal is. You'd think if they just kind of get it in a rhythm and they just keep doing it, it would work, but that's not how it works, and they don't do it that way. So not only are we seeing less episodes in a season, but we're seeing seasons in a shorter amount of time, leaving a great void. And that great void in our year, in our free time, might be good because there's too much stuff to choose from. So maybe theoretically, we could binge watch more seasons of shows over the course of that year. Here's the problem, though, and I mentioned House of Cards a couple times. I watched House of Cards up until the last season, and I was excited about the last season before the whole Kevin Spacey thing happened, because I knew that they were going to shift the plot line and everything to Claire, and it was going to be more about Claire, and that I was excited about that because I wanted to see what that presidency would be like and those storylines would be like. And then the Kevin Spacey thing happened, but that didn't bother me, because again, I knew they were going to shift everything to focusing on Claire, and so I was still interested. But so much time elapsed between the last episode of the second to last season and the first episode of the new season. By the time the new season rolled around, I didn't care anymore. I haven't watched a single episode of it. Don't want to. I have no interest in it. I've moved on in my life. So in that context, with I think more than just me, producers and writers and the Netflixes of the world miss some audience. Some audience drops off. Probably not enough for them to care about. I get that. But there's a consumer habit that we have to be aware of. And if you are driving by someone's house and dumping a wheelbarrow full of your crap on their yard and expecting them to get rid of it, then you need to get them in the habit. This is a terrible analogy of being having to move the crap off of their yard in 7 days, not 364. So keep putting crap in people's yards. That's the point of the first part of this rant. Now, podcasts are becoming very similar. Now, podcast is audio listening on demand, and I have a tendency to, you know, save up two or three episodes of a given podcast and listen to them all at once, you know, on my commute back and forth between Lexington and Louisville, because I've got an hour, and if the podcast only lasts 20 minutes, I can probably squeeze three in. Right. So it's fine. If it's a longer podcast, and I do listen to a couple of those, I got to be selective on, you know, I'm going to only listen to one thing on this particular trip. So let's do that. But podcasts have a tendency these days to at least have the courtesy of waiting a week before they drop a new episode. So they're in that, let's do it one at a time over for weeks. But they still fall victim to the same unfortunate thinking about the word season. Because this Friday, I believe it's this Friday, the season 4 of Revisionist History drops, which is one of my favorite podcasts, and that is the podcast of Malcolm Gladwell. I love almost everything Malcolm Gladwell does. I think Revisionist History is a fantastic podcast. But do you know the last time there was a new episode of Revisionist History to listen to? That would be August of last year. It has been almost a year. It's been 10 months since a new revisionist history has come out. Now, we've had the good fortune that Gladwell's new podcast company, Panoply or whatever it's called, has broken record, which is fantastic. They've launched a new one with Michael Lewis, the author, Michael Lewis, called Against the Rules. Absolutely fantastic. They're involved in a couple of others too. So there have been several other things that have come out in the last year to distract me from the frustration of not having my weekly fix of something from Malcolm Gladwell. And the podcast launched its little teaser a couple of days ago to say season 4 of Revisionist History is upon us. And I'm excited for now, but in 10 weeks when the 10th episode happens, which is about all they do on a season, I'm going to be pissed because now I got to wait a year, 10 months or so before I get to hear another edition. Am I going to still have interest at that point? Well, it's Malcolm Gladwell, so probably, but will everyone? I don't know. And that frustrates me. So I need more Malcolm Gladwell than that. Television shows are becoming like extended movies, which is good for entertainment value, but it's devastating for our free time. Podcasts are becoming like greatest hits collections, which is okay at first, but they aren't music, so you're not going to listen to them over and over again. Podcasters and show producers alike, I want to talk to you for a minute. I think you owe it to your integrity to produce more than 10 measly shows a season and call that and a season being an entire calendar year. There are 4 seasons in a year. If you want to do 40 episodes a year, I can live with that. That sounds great. In fact, it's a lot closer to the 23 that we used to get out of TV shows a long time ago. Now, I know that there's a lot of money. There's a lot of research. There's a lot of energy that goes into producing podcasts. I know it's a new medium and advertising dollars haven't quite, nobody's saying, well, number one on our list to spend money with is podcasts. Very few people are. But that's going to come because you're building good content with good audiences. So I realize there is a gray area. There's a balance there that we need to maintain, but you got to produce more than 10 shows. Malcolm, talking to you. You got to produce more than 10 shows in a calendar year. Your audience is thirsty for your content. Produce more of it because the future as it stands means we're all going to fall out of love with your stuff. And that is not what you want to have happen. So my thoughts on podcasts. Carol Lustig is here and she asked a question of Shannon. So we'll try to follow up with Shannon and have him come and respond to you. Carol, will you be covering Seller Central or Vendor Central or both? My guess is on Thursday's course, he'll focus on Seller Central. But if you want to ask questions about Vendor Central, and I'll plant the seed to talk about Vendor Central, we'll ask that as well. So come to the Thursday course, and we'll try to cover that. Check that box for you there, Carol. Thank you so much for chiming in with your question this morning. Okay. It's the time in the show that you've all been waiting for. Well, I don't know if you've been waiting for it, but Brian and Savannah have. They're sitting across the room from me and they love this part because I start getting loud and making them laugh sometimes. I hope I make them laugh today. Anyway, so my rant for this week is about is pointed at construction workers and contractors who happen to work on bathrooms. Gather around the family, kids. This is going to be fun. Now, I realize there's not a lot of construction workers or contractors watching my show. If you are, jump in the comments. You're going to win a prize. I'll send you a book or some shit. I don't know what I'll do, but I'll send you something. So what I need you to do is take in this information and then find the contractor and construction people in your life that you know, and pass this on. It is a word of mouth movement, no pun intended, that we're going to change bathrooms. Now, here's the deal. There's a little bit of physical. I got to illustrate this in a way. So I'm going to back up a bit because I don't want to kill the microphone. Maybe I can do it this way. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to do it up here. All right. So for those of you who do construction work and contracting work in a bathroom, The next time you are in a situation where you have to install the toilet paper roll, I would like to give you a bit of advice that I think will help you. Before you drill, before you get out your screwdriver, before you even get out the pencil and the level and the measurement thing to make it all happen and work, before you do that, I would like for you to do one thing for me. I would like for you to sit on the toilet. Sit down and do this. Hold your arms out at shoulder length, turn your palms out, and then touch the wall. That's where it goes. It goes right there. It doesn't go up here. It doesn't go down here. It sure as crap doesn't go back here. It goes shoulder length out, palms out, touch the wall right there. Why? Because if you put it right there, then when I'm sitting on the toilet, I can just reach up and grab it. I sat in a bathroom in a hotel about a year ago, and it was the lobby bathroom, but it was configured in a strange way. But anyway, I sit down and I'm doing my business, right? And I get done, and I literally had to stand up and waddle 3 steps forward to pull the toilet paper off the toilet paper roll, waddle 3 steps back and continue my business. Now, that is idiotic. If you don't understand that when people are seated, they need to be able to reach this stuff, then you don't need to be installing fixtures in bathrooms. So, my dear viewers and listeners out there, what I need you to do now is spread the word. The thing is, sit down, shoulder length, palms out, touch the wall right there. Put it there. Every time it's going to work. If you're 6'9", bring it down an inch or two. If you're 4'11", maybe you bring it up an inch or two. But that's where it goes and should go always. So there you have it. That's my rant for today. Next week on the show, wow, I don't even know who's on the show next week. I'll post that stuff in the comments. I'm ill-prepared. I was so excited about talking to you about bathrooms that I did not prepare my next week on the show, Little Diddy. But someone is on the show next week, and they're fantastic and fabulous. So put it on your calendar, 8 a.m. on Tuesday, live right here on the LinkedIns. That's next Tuesday at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, 5 a.m. Pacific Time for you folks on the West Coast. I'm sorry you have to get up so early. But if you miss it, if you're on the West Coast and it's too early for you, then we do archive the show. We put it up on the jasonfalls.com on the blog there, so you can see the link there to the video on the LinkedIn, so you don't have to miss the show. So come by jasonfalls.com and check that out. Please comment and share the show's feed on your LinkedIn feed. Spread the word. We interview some of the innovative thinkers and doers in the digital marketing space every week right here. The show is archived, as I mentioned, at jasonfalls.com, so you can go watch that later, share links to archive shows and all that good stuff. And stay tuned. In the next week or two, we will have the show will be also posted as a podcast, and we're hoping for the Stitchers and the iTunes and the Google Plays of the world for you people who don't know which computer to buy. We're going to have that there for you as well. And, oh, I got some new news as well, because I've been telling people here at the end of the show, if you're looking to get your product or service in front of some people, marketing decision makers, agency folks, and digital marketing influencers, you can sponsor Go Ahead Caller. We're going to have a new sponsor soon. The folks who provide the wonderful magic of the video thing here, Switcher Studio, is signing up as a sponsor of Go Ahead Caller. So we will have more to tell you about them. Episode 39, if you want to go back in the archives, I interviewed Switcher Studio CEO Nick Mattingly, and that was the first episode we did as an interview show, showing off the software and what it can do. I've had several people ask how I'm able to pull that off, because they know I'm a dummy and can't do it by myself, and it's because of Switcher Studio. So they're going to be coming on board as a sponsor, so that's going to be super exciting to have that happen. Let's see. Do I have any other notes that I need to tell you about? The jasonfalls.com, we went over that. So, yeah, that's it. That's it for this week's edition of Go Ahead Caller. Be sure to join us next week at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, 5 a.m. Pacific for the big show. I'll see you next Tuesday morning. And remember, your job as a marketer in everything you do is to make them say, holy smokes. See you next week.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.